From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, a walk on the paranormal side with Paul and Ben Eno. So get ready for that. But here's what's happening. Well, physicist Stephen Hawking is stirring it up. Oh, is he? He says the afterlife is merely a fairy story. Renowned physicist Stephen Hawking recently explained his belief that there is no God and that humans should therefore seek to live the most valuable lives they can while on Earth. Hawking was asked if he feared death in a story published over the weekend. Here's his response. I have lived with the prospect of an early death for the last 49 years. I'm not afraid of death, but I'm in no hurry to die. I have so much I want to do first. I regard the brain as a computer, which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers. That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. Well, I received a few emails about Stephen Hawking's statement today. Many of them said, hey, he should stick with physics and not spirituality. Dr. Bruce Goldberg, an expert on reincarnation. Bruce, what do you think of this one?
Well, with all due respect to Stephen Hawking, he is completely wrong. First, as far as reincarnation is concerned, there are so many documented cases. My famous case, The Search for Grace, which was made into a CBS movie, described a woman who described a couple of dozen facts about her past life, which was corroborated by the network. But two of the facts were incorrectly reported by newspaper reporters, and she reported the correct information, which she couldn't have gotten by reading newspaper reports because they were wrong about it. And New York is a closed state, which means you have to have a paper trail to get that information. It's one of the most documented cases. But here's something else. First of all, the science behind this. When Hawking says that, he says, the universe and humans exist because of coincidence and spontaneous creation. Now, the late brilliant Nobel laureate, Francis Crick, the co-discoverer of DNA, he came up with the panspermia theory, which directed panspermia, and he was talking about the origin of life on this planet. And he said, basically, number one, there's no primordial soup that existed on the Earth that supposedly gave rise to our DNA and our enzymes and hormones and everything else. That's number one. But even if you believe in a primordial soup, Crick came up with this theory that says that there's 2,000 enzymes in life itself. The chance of obtaining them by chance alone is 1 part in 10 to 40,000 zeros. If you know what that means, it's so unlikely that even if the entire universe was composed of organic soup, you still wouldn't get the combination together. And all life on Earth is based upon a single type of genetic code. But if life came from what scientists believe to be a primeval soup, then organisms should have different kinds of genetic code. So that doesn't even work.
So you think Stephen should stick with physics?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not a metaphysician. I mean, the concept of, first of all, Americans, this is America, okay? 58% of Americans, according to a Roper poll, believe in reincarnation. A CBS News poll that was done yesterday on the 15th of May by the CBS News Sunday morning show showed that 1 in 10 Americans remember a past life. Now, what's he saying, that 30 million Americans are crazy and he's right? I mean, you know, well, the other thing he says, which is interesting about, you have to go by statements, too, that he makes about and generalize. For example, he says that science can explain the universe's origin without invoking God. That's a direct quote. All right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Science can't even come up with the theory of everything or the grand unified theory that Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life trying to prove.
Well, what he says, Bruce, he says one thing I think you and I both agree with, and that is live life to its fullest. But we both agree there's much more to the other side than Stephen Hawking says. Thanks again. Dr. Bruce Goldberg's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Some people believe the end of the world is near, and a few groups believe that the end will come this Saturday, May 21st. My oh my, the group Family Radio says Judgment Day is just days away. In the Bible, it says, guarantees it. As a matter of fact, a video on their website goes on to talk about just how May 21st is the day of judgment, where many people will be taken. Then on October 21st, it's the end of the planet for the rest of us who are left behind. Now, as a matter of fact, I want to tell you a little bit about this. I was approached today by our network because the folks at the Family Radio wanted to buy commercials this week on my program. And, of course, our network always gives me the approval, and they came to me and said, George, what do you want to do? And I kind of looked at it and I said, well, you know, I've been a little critical of the organization in that I don't believe May 21st is going to be Judgment Day, that we're not going to be taken, and that October 21st is not the end of the planet. It would be a little hypocritical of me to say, sure, take the money. So I'm not going to. I told them, no, the commercials will not run as paid commercials on the show. Now, in fairness to the folks at Family Radio, some of them truly believe in Judgment Day. I'm going to let you listen at no cost to them to their 30-second commercial. Here it is.
The time is May 21st.
May 21.
May 21st, 2011.
We know from the Bible that day of rapture will be May 21st of 2011.
That is the appointed day.
They are commanded to warn the world.
The sword is coming.
May 21st.
It's going to be the beginning of the end.
We are that last generation.
Don't we qualify to be that last generation?
The Word of God has brought us to the day.
Please go to familyradio.com and click on How Do I Begin?
Okay, May 21st, Ian Punt will be on at Saturday night. We'll see how Ian handles that part of the story. Monday, I will be back on, and we will have interviews with some people, and we'll find out why no one was taken. That's my guess. God, I hope I'm right. A German man, considered to be among the world's top spider smugglers, was sentenced to 6 months in federal prison for bringing hundreds of tarantulas into the United States by mail. The U.S. district judge said he hoped that the sentencing of Sven Koppler, a 37-year-old German, would deter others from trying to smuggle animals into the U.S. Court documents filed in the case, they estimate that the illegal wildlife trade generates as much as $20 billion a year. Two leading makers of lighting products are showcasing LED bulbs that are now bright enough to replace energy-guzzling 100-watt light bulbs set to disappear from stores in January. The demonstrations at the Light Fair trade show in Philadelphia this week mean that brighter LED bulbs will likely go on sale next year, but after a government ban takes effect. Bob Crane, by the way, is all over these LED light bulbs and making some great ones. You know, if we're going to go this way, the LED bulb is the way to go, not all those little fluorescents. No, 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 no. The Transportation Security Administration says its full-body X-ray scanners are safe and that radiation from a scan is equivalent to what's received in about 2 minutes of flying. The company that makes them says it's safer than eating a banana. But some scientists with expertise in imaging and cancer say the evidence made public to support those claims is unreliable. And in a new letter sent to White House Secretary of Science, the advisor John Holdren, they questioned why the TSA won't make the scanners available for independent testing by outside scientists. An expert on cancer, a leading authority, Dr. Leonard Coldwell, with us. Leonard, what do you think of this story?
George, that is completely absurd. There is no such thing as a safe dose of radiation. Known in the world as one of the leading, world's leading experts for cancer cures, I have studied radiation all my life and the dangers and damages from radiation. Radiation is basically capable of unzipping or tearing apart the double-stranded DNA. And that means it's creating bubbles in the DNA, and this will interfere with the process of gene expression in the DNA or DNA replication, which means any form of radiation exposure will basically give you potentially cancer. And low doses can be much more dangerous than high doses under certain circumstances. We all need to be aware of the fact that radiation is the main cause of cancer, and that experts state that 50% of all cancers in America are radiation-induced. Radiation is the main cause of premature aging. Radiation is very easily able and capable of changing the genetic molecules in every internal organ.
So we need some studies on this, don't we, Leonard?
Absolutely, George. The main problem really is that there are no studies done. There are no long-term studies done. there is an extreme danger in these machines to begin with. Even if there is a glitch in power at any point in the hardware, it can fry you like you're getting fried in a microwave oven. People need to be aware of the dangers that they potentially get cancer by being just one single time in an airport full-body scanner. Besides the naked picture they get of the children, of their wives, and everybody involved in the biometric scan.
Well, let me tell you, Leonard, that's a great point. Dr. Colwell, by the way, is a leading authority on cancer. Go to his website. It's linked up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. You'll know exactly what we're talking about, and I'm glad he's speaking out about this situation with the TSA. I know, by the way, you know, I'm a stickler on dental hygiene and everything else. I was going to be a dentist when I was in my early days of college, and I did that for 2 years. And I go to the dentist twice a year. I mean, it's ingrained in my head now, and my hygienist there, Tracy, she's a great girl. But, you know, whenever they put those little things in there, they want to take a picture of your teeth, and, you know, they do their little radiation test and everything else. She always runs out of the room. What does that tell you? A space shuttle Endeavour took flight for the next to the last time as Representative Gabrielle Giffords, still recovering from a gunshot wound and hidden from public view, watched her husband rocket through the clouds in a deafening roar. Giffords and other crew families were described as awestruck and silent on the rooftop of the Launch Control Center. Here's our science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. Richard, off and away, all is well?
There's a few minor little problems, but nothing that can't be handled. What they're doing now is they're unlimbering the boom system that's going to be used in the next hour and a half to start looking at all the surfaces on the shuttle, what they call the thermal protection system, because we don't want to have happen on reentry the same thing that happened back during Columbia.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
several
God.
Years ago. So this is part of the protocol. That's why it takes 2 days from the time you launch to get to the station. They're about 1,100 miles behind the station and below it, catching up about 100 miles per orbit. And all that time is used to survey, among other things, the exterior of the shuttle to make sure that the heat shield, the tiles, is in perfect shape for coming back. If they suddenly had to dump out of orbit, like they had a fuel cell go down or something, you would have to be assured that heat shield would survive. They will be arriving at the station at 6:16 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Wednesday. So I'm going to be up. I presume a lot of the coasties are going to be
you
up.
You always are. You're our eyes and ears.
And the really cool thing about this mission, which is what makes real what I said a couple missions ago about a transition between Newtonian science and hyperdimensional physics, the main payload on this flight, 134, is the AMS, the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, which is going to be attached to the station permanently and will be looking up into space as the station whirls around the Earth every 90 minutes. And it is filled with all kinds of exquisite gadgetry, magnets, detectors, and all that. And they're actually expecting, George, they may actually find some fundamental new particles or aspects of the universe, which would bring the day when hyperdimensional physics is public a little bit closer.
Next to the last flight, kind of emotional, Richard?
Very, because, you know, you watch this amazing bird, this thing that we created some 30-plus years ago, go up and up and up, and it's only gotten better and better and better. I mean, if they came to me tomorrow and said, would you fly on the next one? In a heartbeat. And as you know, politically, I would not have said that even 2 or 3 years ago, because they are now doing all the things to keep it safe that they did not do in the beginning because of, you know, complacency or whatever. The problem is we have one more flight of Atlantis in July now, and I'm hoping that Robin and I will be able to make it, perhaps even as official coast representatives to that launch, George.
We'll take care of you.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Richard. Richard C. Hoagland. Scientists have found a gene linked to diabetes and cholesterol as a master switch that controls other genes found in fat in the body, and they say it could help in the search for treatments for obesity-related diseases. After 45 years, Jerry Lewis is retiring as host of the Muscular Dystrophy Association's Labor Day Telethon. The 85-year-old comedian and Las Vegas resident issued a statement calling it a time for a new telethon era. He says he'll make his final appearance on the six-hour primetime telethon September 4th by performing his song, You'll Never Walk Alone. Lewis says he'll continue as the association's national chairperson, a role he's held since the early 1950s. Up next, a rally on Capitol Hill held in honor of an Amish farmer. Why? Well, we'll tell you with Jonathan Emord next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. A rally on Capitol Hill held in honor of Dan Allgaier, an Amish farmer from the area of Pennsylvania who has seemingly become an enemy of the state, not because he's a violent man, not because he performs acts that threaten the lives or property of others, not because he is involved in some plot to overthrow the government, because he dared. He dared to sell unpasteurized milk. Jonathan Emord, principal of Emord & Associates. He practices constitutional and administrative law in Washington, D.C., rapidly becoming a regular here on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan, what the heck is this all about?
Well, this is part and parcel of an agenda that FDA has adopted during this administration of Margaret Hamburg, the FDA commissioner. It's a corporatist agenda. It favors big business and it wipes out small business. They adopted a GMP rule that, even in the rule, it says, and I quote, as a result of this rule, 140 very small and 32 small dietary supplement manufacturers will be at risk of going out of business. FDA estimates the number of workers in those firms to be about 2,250. In other words, they're estimating they're going to put out of business those institutions. We have the Food Safety Modernization Act, which now will require even this Amish farmer we're going to talk about to be registered with the federal government and to go through hearings at the federal government, at the FDA, for revocations of those registrations, which would shut him down. And then also these new FDA, FTC enforcement agenda. But on Dan Alger, the Amish farmer from Kinzers, Pennsylvania, this is an outrageous case. Here you've got a person who has lived a law-abiding life in seclusion, essentially, out of society, on a farm, raising beautiful cows, by the way, healthy animals. They're tested by vets. They're totally healthy. His milk is tested. It's totally safe. The entire community out there of Amish in the Dutch, Pennsylvania area consume his milk and have done so safely for decades. And they do a sting operation on this guy under their regulation that prohibits any interstate sale of unpasteurized milk. Now, that's any unpasteurized milk. It doesn't matter if you test it and prove that it's safe. It doesn't matter, like Alger's milk. It's totally safe. No one has ever been harmed by it. They condemn all of it.
Well, let me ask you, Jonathan, for a moment. Why did they pasteurize milk?
Well, they pasteurized milk. They pasteurized milk to get rid of pathogens in the milk. And the pathogens in the milk occur not only in unpasteurized milk, but also in even pasteurized milk. I mean, that's why every year thousands of cases of listeria and salmonella poisoning from pasteurized milk occur, because milk is a natural medium for the growing of bacteria. The way you prevent that is through refrigeration and careful handling of the milk and proper expiration dating. And so in this case, as soon as the milk is harvested, it's refrigerated, and it's sold rapidly after it's harvested, and the people are consuming it are getting a real rich array of vitamins and minerals. Pasteurization actually destroys much of the nutritional content.
Okay. As long as they know it's not going to last as long, right?
Well, that's right. And it's like with anything. I mean, this is really hypocritical, because if you applied the same approach universally, you could never eat sushi. You could never have raw oysters. You couldn't even have chicken and fish. You certainly couldn't have steak tartare. But they don't do that. They just apply it in this area because the large milk manufacturers who have pasteurized milk are very worried about the growing organic movement in Whole Foods markets, in other words.
That's what it is. Jonathan, hang on. We're going to come back with you in just a moment and talk more about this incredible story about this farmer who sold unpasteurized milk. Later on in this half hour, we'll take your phone calls with Jonathan Emord as well. Perhaps you've ever had a bad batch of milk. What's it like? Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, nighttime producer, line producer Tommy Danheiser is babysitting tonight for his little Freddie. He and his fiancée Raquel have a little dog named Freddie. And you can see Freddie's picture by going to coasttocoastam.com. He's in the highlight reel. I'm holding him up. I'm the one on the right, by the way, on the side of the picture, if you want to take a look at little Freddie. He's a cute little guy. He's a mutt. He's a combination of all kinds of things. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. We'll continue our discussion with Jonathan Emord about this bizarre story of an Amish farmer arrested for selling unpasteurized milk. And we'll take some of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Paul and Ben Eno join us as we talk about paranormal communications on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, where with Jonathan Emord as we talk about the case of the Amish farmer arrested for selling unpasteurized milk. Are they trying to make a point with him?
Yes, they are. This is part of a really part of an anti-competitive agenda. The FDA is performing doing the bidding for big business here. And this is not unusual. In my book, The Rise of Tyranny, I explain in detail how this has come to be. The FDA is a patsy. Really has become a patsy for big business. And look what they did here. I mean, they spent tens of thousands of tax dollars to set up a quote-unquote safe house in a residential community in Maryland and have agents pose as consumers and place orders with Dan for 23 orders of his raw milk to induce Dan and trap him into traveling in a refrigerator truck with the 23 orders across from Pennsylvania into Maryland to deliver it to this FDA house to a smiling female recipient who was an FDA agent acting like a consumer in order to create a foundation for bringing him into federal court and going after him for so much money that it will destroy his farm, causing him to have to sell all his cattle.
They needed him to go across state lines, didn't they?
Well, that's right. They wanted to show that he was in interstate commerce. But this shows you, I mean, can you imagine spending all of that federal money to go after a simple Amish farmer who is really outside of society? He's got cows, and he spends all of his time milking those cows.
Does he even have electricity?
No. I mean, he's an Amish. He's a traditional Amish farmer. He can't have radio. He can't have television. They're destroying someone who is really a beautiful person. I mean, there's no harm here. One of the extraordinary things is, I mean, if you had an instance where you tested his milk and you showed that his milk was harmful, okay, no one would object. Go get the guy. But his milk is safe. In their complaint against him, they don't allege that his milk is contaminated. All they say is that we've proven that it's unpasteurized.
And he admits that, right?
Oh, sure. He readily admits that. They didn't have to spend tens of thousands of tax dollars and a year conducting a clandestine investigation and send two black SUVs up armed with U.S. Marshals onto his farm along a dirt road that only horse and buggies go down. And they go down there to his farm. They come at 4 in the morning. They jump out. He's in there working with the cows in the barn, steps out of the barn. A federal agent comes over to him and taps him on the shoulder. He turns around, says U.S. Marshal Service on his coat. And he says, oh, and he looks at him. And the marshal says, where do you keep the milk?
Are you going to represent him?
I'm representing the Grass-Fed on the Hill group, which is his consumers, various people who buy his milk, have for years, love the stuff, give it to their kids. It's been healthy for them and their families. They love it. And they're going to be denied this now. And unfortunately for Dan, I mean, they are after, as it says in the complaint, the costs of the investigation. Now, they created those costs for over a year to sink his business.
So they could throw a number out that says it's cost us $3 million to investigate you.
They could.
And if he loses,
say, $100,000, Dan doesn't have that money.
No, I was going to ask you, how much is he selling in milk? It can't be that much.
No, you're looking at a quart of milk for maybe a few dollars. I mean, this guy is not, he's doing this largely because he loves the milk. He loves the cows. He thinks it's healthy for people. The whole community out there thrives on it. No one has ever been rendered ill by drinking Dan's milk. I mean, the great myth operating here is that unpasteurized
milk. People got sick from him, Jonathan, you'd be one of the first to say it, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I would not represent someone who is trying to hurt people.
Jesus. This is amazing.
It's a real tragedy, George. It's horrible. In The Rise of Tyranny, I explain how the FDA became a captive of the industry, and it's a very corrupt bargain. I mean, these people who are political appointees know where their bread is buttered. It's not going to be Dan Alger's money. He doesn't have any. It's going to be the big business that's going to employ them when they get out.
How long has he been doing this?
Oh, he's been doing this for decades. This is,
why now? Why are they going after him now then?
Well, if you notice, I mean, many people have noticed, in Whole Foods around the country, they've been selling raw milk, and there's a huge demand for it. There are 10 million consumers of raw milk in the United States.
Yeah, I don't even drink milk anymore, so I wouldn't know, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's a freedom of choice issue, frankly. I mean, I have no problem with the government saying, hey, look, anybody who sells milk, including those that sell raw milk, you've got to test it to make sure it's safe before
sure.
you put it in the market.
Sure. It's got to be regulated somehow.
Yeah, but that's not what's going on here. They're saying that if it's unpasteurized, it is prohibited, absolutely prohibited. And that's ridiculous because even pasteurized milk, in fact, most harm out there is caused by the improper handling of pasteurized milk.
Would Louis Pasteur be turning over in his grave right now?
Well, actually, on his deathbed, he did a little bit of a switch in his view that pasteurization was the panacea. He rejected it as a panacea and said, basically, you got to keep these animals healthy. And that's it. You know, you got to keep your the tuberculosis scare that occurred in the 30s and late 20s took place because they had industrialized farms, and they had sick animals in filthy conditions that they were milking constantly. But these, you know, people like Dan who have these organic farms, they have grass-fed animals. They're beautiful animals, and they're very careful. They have a protocol where they harvest the milk under very safe conditions. They test the milk to make sure that it is safe, and they sell safe product to the public.
Before we take calls, who wins if the FDA takes him down?
No one. The only person who wins are the large companies, but none of us win. I mean, we're just losing an option.
Strange. All right, let's go to the calls. East of the Rockies, Joe out there in Pennsylvania. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. There you go.
George, yeah, Mr. Emord, I've heard you speak on Coast to Coast before. Your brilliant work. I'm very appreciative of it. It's another sad chapter in public service you're talking about here. My question, you kind of answered it. By describing, I was on the phone with the producer when you were talking about the setup across state lines. My question was, had he been given any warning about his sale of milk across state lines, and was he made to know that sale interstate is fine as long as he didn't cross state lines with his milk? And that was my question.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much for that question. He was given warning. They send out these letters, which are almost, to the average person, opaque beyond belief, these bureaucratic letters. And they sent him a letter. And, yeah, I can read that letter as a lawyer and understand what it's saying. It's saying that if you sell in interstate commerce milk, you are committing a violation of FDA regulations. But for him...
Would he have been okay had he not crossed state lines?
Yes.
Okay, so if he just stayed in Pennsylvania, he would have been all right.
That's correct.
Okay.
And there are state regulatory agencies that on behalf of the FDA are driving out of existence these same farmers. But in Pennsylvania, in that area, he could have sold the milk to his, you know, next-door neighbors without offense to the federal government. It's when they created the sting and invited him to bring it to Maryland that they set him up for a fall.
Yeah. Why did he do that?
I don't know. I mean, he basically got 23 orders.
And what does that mean, 23 orders? How much money?
23 orders is a lot of milk.
Is
it? A lot of milk.
Are you talking about 23 bottles or 23 what cases?
Large cases of milk,
right.
23 of them.
Yeah, well, how much do you make a case?
I don't know exactly. It's based on the quantitative amount of milk in there. I'm not really sure.
How many bottles in a case? Maybe a dozen?
Yeah. I mean, he's making a little bit of money.
He probably made $1,000 for crying out.
Maybe at the most, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he paid for his own gas, of course. He drove his refrigerator truck into Maryland to deliver it. Another member of the Amish community went with him.
Has he got a sign on his truck?
No.
Okay.
He doesn't. Oh. It says Rainbow Acres Farm. That's the name of his farm.
Barbara in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Hi, Barbara.
Yeah, I wanted to know. I remember about 15 years ago, there was a scare, and all of a sudden, fruit juices started to be pasteurized. And I was wondering why they're pasteurized, and do they pose the same risks as having milk that's pasteurized and all of a sudden out the air?
I assume, Jonathan, they pasteurize because they think it's going to kill all the germs, right?
Sure. And, you know, this is it's a great question because that's another example of wiping out. I've got another client who has frozen milk products, and they went after him because the frozen milk products were not pasteurized. It's another example of bureaucratic excess because, look, fresh orange juice, if properly refrigerated, will not suffer from these problems, properly refrigerated and handled. But they insist on pasteurization as if pasteurization is the end-all be-all, when, yes, right after it's pasteurized, when they use flash pasteurization for juices, just rapid raise in heat and then down, a lot of the bacteria is killed. But just because all food has bacteria in it, it's a question of the level of unsafe bacteria to determine whether it's going to hurt us. I mean, all eggs will have, to some degree or another, the presence of bacteria, even harmful bacteria. But it's the handling of them, the refrigeration of them, and the handling of them that determines whether you're going to get sick or not. Under this theory that they use for pasteurization of all juice, they won't let any fresh juice be sold unless it's pasteurized. Same thing, you know, as the milk situation. You would never be able to, if you apply that to eggs, you'd only be able to buy cooked eggs.
Jonathan, I've heard some weird stories before. Boy, I hear them all. This is as strange as they come.
It's very strange. It's boggling to the mind to think that the United States government, and Dan's not the only case, would spend tens of thousands of dollars on each of these people who sell these natural products without any proof whatsoever that somebody's hurt. Now, if somebody's hurt, we all understand that. Go get them.
Go get them.
But when they're not hurt, when the people are really conscientious like this Amish farmer and he's doing everything right, why destroy the guy?
Why don't they go after cities that keep dumping fluoride in our drinking water? Why aren't they getting those people?
Right. And why aren't they going after these big producers who are producing pasteurized products in filthy conditions and causing people to get sick? They slap them with a fine or they send them a warning letter, but they don't do what they did here. They don't go to court and drive them out of business.
Just amazing.
It's the double standard operating here.
Let's go to Columbia, Missouri. Zane's with us on Coast to Coast. Zane, go ahead.
Yeah, howdy. Here in mid-Missouri, we have some health food stores and health departments of natural markets the supermarkets have been selling a raw milk cheese called Morning Land Dairy. There's been confiscated thousands of pounds of it. It's been confiscated by the FDA. They've about put Morning Land Dairy out of business. I'm wondering if Obama is, you know, for the Democratic side and so many of the liberals are for natural foods, why would his administration be going after these natural products? And what can we do to put pressure on this administration to finally get the FDA to shape up on so many different levels?
Jonathan, do you think this administration's even aware of what the FDA's up to?
I'm afraid it is, and it's part and parcel of what I've said, a corporatist agenda. A lot of people don't understand that just because President Obama is a Democrat doesn't mean that he's not in favor of big business. I mean, he is a major advocate of this type of regulation. And the Morning Land Dairy situation, I mean, they had 50,000 pounds of organic cheese containing no harmful bacteria in it that the government went in and confiscated in a raid. I mean, this is it's mind-boggling to think what the government is doing to honest people out there. This nation was founded on the principle that liberty was paramount, that the government would act only in an instance where the actions of a private person harmed another person. But now it's gone so overboard that it's typical for this government to use prior restraints to prevent honest people from functioning on the theory that they'll catch the dishonest. And, of course, they never do. The dishonest won't abide by the law.
They should be spending more time chasing down mad cow disease at places. You know what?
Right. Go after the people who are hurting people. Use all your resources with a vengeance against them. But for those people who have a perfect track record, honest, law-abiding folks, why destroy them? Why take out of the market foods that are wholesome that people want?
They never pasteurized milk in the old days, did they?
No, for thousands of years we've had unpasteurized goat milk, unpasteurized cow milk. In fact, most of the world still consumes that kind of milk. And it's the rare exception where people get sick. And the reason is that in most places, you've got free-range animals who are living off of grass. They're healthy. I mean, look what happens in our industrialized environment where they do pasteurize milk. They pump them up with steroids. They make them produce more milk. They give them antibiotics when they get sick. They keep them penned up in a universe where the communicable disease is highly possible. And they do that because it's the most economic. They get the best bang for the buck there. And that's not the best way to get food product. And yet the FDA protects that institution vigorously, doesn't do the kinds of inspections that they're doing here with these little guys, and really forces out of existence the small competition. It is the agenda of this government and of the Food and Drug Administration to promote the interests of the largest businesses in the country. And in The Rise of Tyranny, I explain this in detail, giving many, many examples, as you know, George. And I do this precisely because it is not just unique to this administration. We have a history, whether it's Republican or Democratic administrations, of these regulatory agencies marching on with political appointees who realize their term in office is limited, doing things to feather their own nest when they get out by favoring big business that will reward them handsomely when they do leave. And that happens. I mean, we have the proof. In The Rise of Tyranny, I present the proof of that. It's a revolving door. They go out into the industry. They get paid handsomely for what they've done while they were in government. And it's disgusting. I mean, they're selling our rights, our economic liberties, and even our lives in exchange for their own benefit. And this occurs whether the administration is Republican or Democratic. It's a disaster.
Let's squeeze Patricia in from Mandeville, Louisiana. I'll get you in real fast. Go ahead, Patricia.
Hey, the side effects that they have on the hormones that the government puts in your milk is causing little girls 8, 9, 10 years old to go through puberty.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
They're genetically changing our seeds. They're putting dangerous new light bulbs on the market, which contains mercury. They put fluoride in your toothpaste. They put additives in your food. They turn around and you have more side effects from the drugs that they put on the off. When you go to the doctor, they prescribe drugs for you, which is more dangerous than the disease that you have.
And didn't Monsanto get out of the bovine hormone business by selling off the business, Jonathan?
Well, that's right. I mean,
they want it out.
Your caller's right on. I mean, here, look at this. I mean, it's not just these areas we're talking about here. She's got a good point. You got genetically modified foods. Monsanto is given carte blanche by the federal government. They're modifying the genetic structure of foods. 75% of the vegetables sold in the grocery store today are genetically modified.
Jonathan, I want you to keep in touch with us on this story, and we'll see what happens to this Amish farmer. I'll be back in a moment with Paul and Ben Eno as we talk about paranormal communications on Coast to Coast AM.